One of the issues before the Supreme Court as it wraps up this session, lethal injections in death penalty cases involving a drug called midazolam. The case is brought by several Oklahoma death row inmates, and the justices are considering the questions just a year after the botched execution of Clayton Lockett. His execution in Oklahoma revealed to the general public that there's a shortage of the three-drug cocktail usually used in executions. His case also launched a national debate on whether midazolam, the replacement, violates the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. Just how cruel is laid out in the cover story of this month's Atlantic Magazine. Jeffrey Stern wrote the story. And Jeffrey, start by reminding us why Oklahoma was using midazolam in the first place.
Just about every state that was carrying out lethal injections was using a drug called sodium thiopental, which is a cheap surgical drug. And there was a shortage in that that began in 2009, and that kind of set off a series of alternatives as states sort of scrambled for other ways to execute people.
Well, take us through why there was a shortage. Hospira was the one manufacturer of the drug. The FDA, the government, found that there were problems, so they shut Hospira down. That set off the scramble, and initially states in the U.S. found what they thought was a company in London?
That's right. So there was no longer any legal supplier of the drug. And it became unavailable because the FDA found some contamination in filling lines that where Hospira was making this drug. States, because there is not a lot of medical expertise, which we can get into, that's brought to bear on these lethal injections, were reluctant at first to try other drugs, and they began looking, I mean, almost literally everywhere. They were looking overseas to try to get this same anesthetic, the same surgical drug.
They find this company in London, Dream Pharma. They start buying the sodium thiopental from Dream Pharma, but then you write about an anti-death penalty advocate from a group called Reprieve who decided to go find the company. What did she find?
She found that the company was not really a company, but actually it was just a cupboard in the back of a driving school. It was a driving academy in, on the outskirts of London. And in the back there was literally a cupboard where they were putting drugs and keeping them there until they were shipping them out to states in the U.S. that were using them for executions.
Well, she and her group put pressure on the British government to stop this. Britain doesn't have the death penalty. Ultimately, they're successful. So now you stumble onto another element of this story. It's one thing for a government to say, we're not going to help you carry out your executions. You write about how CEOs of companies, when they find out that states in the U.S. are trying to get this drug for executions, they say no.
Yeah, well, it's this interesting thing. I mean, I think we often think of big pharma as sort of anti-liberal left. But in this case, big pharma, just the pharmaceutical industry in general, and the kind of liberal anti-death penalty left are actually almost perfectly aligned because there's really no interest for a pharmaceutical company in having their product be used for executions. It's totally anathema to what they design these products for. Once this drug shortage started and these sort of spectacular attempts to get drugs elsewhere began to surface, then there was a lot of pressure on the drug companies, and they didn't really have much interest in having their product be used. So they began taking eventually fairly proactive steps to keep the drugs out of the hands of execution states.
There's also pressure on the states, many of them very conservative states, which have, you know, promised citizens that they'd carry out death penalties. It starts to get political. And also, you write that since the original manufacturer, Hospira, was the only FDA-approved company, the DEA is about to come down on states for, what, the illegal transfer of drugs from other countries?
Yeah. The prisons had become, in effect, drug smugglers. Now, the FDA had chosen not to really pay attention to this. But while the FDA was looking the other way, the DEA did not. And they actually began a series of raids and confiscated these drugs or, in some cases, compelled the prisons to turn the drugs over.
Enter a reporter named Katie Fretland in your story. She found emails in 2011 between officials in Oklahoma because Texas was desperate to get some of the drugs that Oklahoma had at the time. What were those emails about?
So there was this sort of shady black market that was going on where states were sometimes supplying each other with drugs. And the emails that she turned up were these sort of jovial, joking emails about trading things like football tickets for execution drugs. And so she was surprised, as many people have been, by how cavalier these emails about death penalty drugs.
By the way, along the way, you also meet dedicated civil servants, wardens and officials who are assigned with carrying out these death penalty verdicts. You talk about one guy who literally is walking from drugstore to drugstore trying to get the drugs he needs.
And as I began talking to some of these people, it became clear that many of them, not all of them certainly, but many of them are, as you say, dedicated civil servants. Some of them are ambivalent about the death penalty, but feel that they're sort of fulfilling a job that's important. A judge, a jury has decided. In some cases, they were lawyers, the general counsel for the Department of Corrections, who his faith was first and foremost to the Constitution, and he believed this was him upholding the Constitution.
Right.
So when these drug shortages began, these people were desperate to try to get a hold of drugs. And you have these very surreal scenes where people are, as you say, walking into compounding pharmacies and saying, well, can I get the drug from you? Can I get the drug from you?
So there's that. But bring us to 2013. Florida claims to have carried out an execution that was successful with midazolam, and now other states are looking at that. What is midazolam?
So midazolam is basically an anti-anxiety sedative that's used sometimes in surgery, although almost never without another more powerful anesthetic. It is not an analgesic, which means it has no painkilling properties. Doctors are not in total agreement, but generally do not rely on this drug to create the deep coma-like state that is needed for what we consider to be anesthesia.
Well, and that brings us to the centerpiece of your piece, which is that Oklahoma decides to use it in the execution of Clayton Lockhart. By any account, his crimes were horrific. Shot a young girl point blank when she refused to keep his crimes a secret. Then he has his accomplices bury her alive. But what happens in his execution?
On the evening of his executions, the problems began almost immediately, beginning at about 5:27 when they began trying to place an IV. And it took the better part of an hour to place an IV, which is extraordinary. This just never happens for anyone in the medical profession. No one can explain why. The execution started more than 20 minutes late. The moment the first drugs were administered, almost immediately the IV infiltrated, which means it was no longer in the vein. The drugs were, rather than going directly into his bloodstream through his veins, were actually just sort of infusing into his tissue. So he was getting a smaller dose of a drug that didn't even really have the effect that it was thought to have.
But they don't know that. And so they keep the IV thinking that it's going into the veins. And you paint a picture. I mean, at a certain point, people are yelling out, he's trying to get off the table. I mean, he literally comes alive after everyone thought he was dead.
Yeah, I mean, one of the witnesses, a victim service advocate, recounted it as being like a horror movie. As at one point, when the doctor finally approached Lockhart, finally decided that something had to be wrong and approached him to inspect the IV site, this victim service advocate reported seeing Lockhart get up and look right at the doctor and open his eyes.
So he ultimately, after 43 minutes, dies. But that case is completely shadowing the case that's before the Supreme Court that's brought by other Oklahoma death row inmates. We've heard a little bit of how the court has responded, how the justices have responded to some of the arguments from both sides. And again, what seems to be on trial is not lethal injections as much as midazolam. What have they said?
Yeah, well, I think you're exactly right. I think that this could be a very narrow ruling that just has to do with midazolam and not lethal injection, more broadly speaking. I mean, it could be the kind of thing that spawns other challenges. Certainly, there'll be other challenges to whatever the next drug that's used is, if indeed midazolam is ruled to be a violation of the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. I don't think there are many people, even in the legal field, who expect this to be a very broad ruling.
Well, and Justice Alito, his calling it kind of a guerrilla war against the death penalty, he said that. But on the other hand, Justice Elena Kagan is pointing out that the third drug in Oklahoma's protocol, this is in the three-drug cocktail, which is potassium chloride, has been likened to being burned alive, but she said we can't tell. Talk about that aspect of this.
Oh, right. So to have potassium chloride administered, if you're not really anesthetized, is extraordinarily painful. But the other thing is that the second drug that's been used in almost all of the three-drug cocktails is a muscle relaxant or a paralytic. So it might be the case that, for example, the Clayton Lockhart execution was so extraordinary, not because of how poorly it went, but because we could see it. There are a lot of questions about other executions and whether people were experiencing this extreme agony but simply couldn't move or speak because they were paralyzed,
yeah,
and also whether they would be actually experiencing air hunger. I mean, they would be suffocating.
And, of course, we should say there are people who ask, who cares? These are people who've done horrific things. And so that question is raised as well. But then there's the constitutionality, cruel and unusual punishment. So it may or may not go broader. But in any case, if they side with these inmates and rule against the use of midazolam, the way you've laid it out, it doesn't seem as if there's anything else available.
Yeah. I mean, it would create likely another scramble for execution drugs. I mean, there's very little medical expertise that's being brought to bear here because there are very few doctors who want anything to do with this, and fewer and fewer as it gains more and more traction sort of in the public eye.
Jeffrey Stern, who takes on the issue of the lack of drugs in the U.S. for lethal injections. His cover story in The Atlantic is called The Execution of Clayton Lockhart. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. And we'll keep an eye on the Supreme Court case with this background. Jeffrey, thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin. Really appreciate it.